China. To many, it invokes images of antiquity, tranquility, and harmony. It is the land of ancient wisdom, eternal truth, and time-honored tradition. But China is not what she appears to be. Beneath the facade is turmoil and terror. Many citizens in the world's most populated country are afraid of losing their jobs, their homes, even their lives. For many, there is no such thing as stability and security. They are forced to live day to day, minute by minute. Families are torn apart and whole communities disrupted. Thousands have died, all as ordered by the leader of the People's Republic of China, Jiang Zemin. In the year 2000, Amnesty International named Jiang as one of the world's top offenders of human rights.
Today, Amnesty International USA speaks out about five human rights scoundrels from the year 2000. We include Jiang Zemin for maintaining the Chinese Communist Party's grip on power through the widespread use of torture, persecution of minority groups, and the denial of freedom of speech, association, and religion.
Between April and July 2001, more people were executed in the People's Republic of China than in the rest of the world over the last 3 years. Amnesty International began keeping records of executions worldwide in 1993, and every year since then, more people were executed in China than in the rest of the world combined. The surge in executions is attributed to the government's Strike Hard campaign against crime in the streets. But the regime is using this as an opportunity to crack down on all that don't conform to party ideology and that are not government-sanctioned.
Amnesty has been following the Strike Hard campaign in the last 2 years in China, but this is not the first time the Chinese have organized a very systematic crackdown on would-be criminals, political dissidents, and carried out mass executions. They did this earlier in the 1990s. That resulted in thousands of executions. And again, in 2001, we learned of more than 4,000 sentences of death, over 2,400 people actually executed, probably more.
One example of such miscarriage of justice is the high-profile case of Xu Wanli. Xu is a pro-democracy advocate who had been arrested in 1981 and jailed for 12 years. In November of 1998, he was again arrested for suggesting the formation of a democratic party in China. He was brought to court in December. The trial lasted about 3.5 hours, and he was represented by only a state-appointed lawyer. Xu Wanli, at age 55, received a sentence of 13 years in prison.
This is typical for what happens to political activists. They're separated from their families. They're put in miserable conditions in prison, and so we're following many cases like that.
After the September 11th attack on the United States, the Jiang regime took advantage of the war on terrorism to crack down on targeted groups. The country's criminal law was quickly amended in December 2001 to include legislation against so-called ethnic separatists and terrorist forces. The new laws are worded vaguely according to human rights groups. This allows the regime to justify its persecution of ethnic groups in China's autonomous regions.
They feel challenged, for example, by the Uyghur minority, the small Muslim group that primarily lives in Xinjiang province. And there have been separatists there, and there have been people who simply agitate peacefully for greater cultural autonomy. And China has used the crisis after the attacks of September 11th to crack down on this Uyghur minority, to claim they're separatists, it's their Muslim, they can connect them to the Muslim extremists who carried out the attacks on 9/11. So there have been executions of political activists, there have been a greater number of arrests, and the Chinese are consistently saying these are simply separatists, they're engaging in terrorism, which has become this code word, this buzzword that kind of covers everything. So we are also very critical of Chinese authorities for exploiting what happened on September 11th for their own narrow purposes.
During a meeting with Chinese officials in August 2002, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights censured the regime's use of the September 11th attacks as an excuse to boost repression. The High Commissioner also inquired about the fate of Rabia Kadir, a prominent Uyghur businesswoman who contributed greatly towards women's rights in China. The new laws also give renewed impetus to the persecution of religious and spiritual groups. In February 2002, unregistered Christians, including Catholics, were targeted and at least 129 killed in raids on house churches. Nearly 24,000 were arrested and over 4,000 sentenced to what the government calls re-education. The Center for Religious Freedom released a report analyzing 7 top-secret documents that identified 14 groups as evil cults. The Christian South China Church and the meditation practice of Falun Gong were included. The documents provided detailed plans for destroying the groups. Jiang Zemin views Falun Gong as the number one enemy of the state, and his attacks on followers of the meditation practice is brutal and widespread. In 1999, Jiang formed a secret police task force called the Head Office for Handling the Falun Gong Issue, otherwise known as the 610 Office, because it was established on June 10th. This agency operates like the Nazi Gestapo, and it has a presence in every town, and absolute power over all levels of administration and all political and judiciary systems. 4 months later, to justify their actions, the regime amended China's criminal law to include an anti-cult law.
Chinese are, of course, very flexible and self-serving in how they apply their own law. There are many dimensions to my concern here. First, in the immediate sense, there are people who become victims. The Falun Gong are extremely vivid examples of that. We know of more than 200 who died in custody, for example, presumably as a result of torture. And many, many more have simply been arrested or sent to re-education through labor camps, which is an administrative procedure. They have not been convicted of any particular crime.
The legislation calls for all corners of society to be mobilized in preventing and fighting against cult activities and a comprehensive management system to be put in place. This management system includes battering, brainwashing, torture, rape, and murder. People of all ages, gender, and physical condition are beaten and denied food and sleep. They are also denied toilet use. Victims are often shocked with electric stun devices carrying 30,000 volt charges. They are strung up or tied down so they can't move for days. Other torture methods include burning practitioners with cigarettes and hot metal rods, overdosing them with drugs, and force-feeding them with hot pepper solutions or salt water. In many cases, women are forced to have late-term abortions. When it comes to Falun Gong, police are under orders to physically destroy practitioners and to not identify the body, cremate immediately. Officials are ordered to sentence all practitioners refusing to denounce Falun Gong to lifetime incarceration. They are also ordered to kill without mercy. These orders have all been issued through the 610 office. The government closely guards the actual number of deaths and controls all statistics and information published. Officials deny responsibility for deaths in custody, often reporting them as suicides or the result of natural causes. Reports of psychiatric abuse in the People's Republic of China are so prevalent that the World Psychiatric Association voted at its 2002 International Congress to send a mission to investigate. Based on research, it is estimated that at least 3,000 people charged with some kind of political crime in the past 2 decades were referred for psychiatric evaluation by police, and that most of them were deemed mentally ill. This is more than the number confirmed to have been illegally committed to mental institutions by the Soviets in the 1970s and 80s. In Tibet, Jiang regime's campaign against freedom of belief is long-standing. Many of those imprisoned are monks and nuns, and they, like other prisoners of conscience, have had their sentences extended repeatedly.
We know of more than 250 cases, mostly monks and nuns, Tibetan Buddhist monks and nuns, who are in jail, but there are probably many more. And there's been torture of these prisoners. And of course, we've had the Panchen Lamas, this young boy who would perhaps be groomed to be a successor to among the leaders of Tibetan Buddhism. And he disappeared a few years ago, and the Chinese appointed their own Panchen Lama. So this is a case of a young child being disappeared by Chinese officials. And I think it's a very emblematic case.
With the move toward globalization, the advent of the Internet, and exposure to Western ideals and freedoms, there is fear that the communist regime will lose its grip. Jiang is doing everything to maintain his position of power, and it means taking extreme measures. Jiang Zemin is no stranger to orders like shoot to kill. He rose to power during the student pro-democracy movement in 1989, supporting the move to take military action. Jiang was party head in Shanghai at the time. In April, he suspended the editor of the Shanghai-based World Economic Herald. This was a liberal newspaper that published articles the party considered controversial. Shortly after, he closed down the paper completely. Journalists across the country protested this action. Jiang knew it would set off student reaction as well. He immediately presented universities with a list of orders. These directives were designed to tighten up rules and regulations, prevent students from networking or forming organizations, and generally put educators on alert for trouble. Having demonstrated his ability to control the media, Jiang was summoned to Beijing to take charge of propaganda. Not long after, at the end of May, he was appointed General Secretary. Immediately after the massacre of students on June 4th by the People's Liberation Army, a nationwide purge was conducted to rid the party and the country of those considered liberals. Thousands were arrested, imprisoned, tortured, or executed. Many remain unaccounted for. Even the single man who stopped a line of tanks. Over a decade later, those involved directly or indirectly with Tiananmen 1989 are still suffering.
Well, we know of cases of people, even a group of farmers, for example, who among their demands was a reinvestigation of what happened at Tiananmen Square and hold officials responsible for the violence that took place, for the thousands of people who were killed or injured or arrested on that night in early June 1989. There are still people in jail because of their activity in Tiananmen Square. There are people in exile living in the West or elsewhere in Asia because of their involvement in Tiananmen Square. It has not been resolved. It's not resolved on ideological grounds, and it is not resolved in terms of the lives of those who were caught up in the demonstrations and who suffered because of their participation in these pro-democracy demonstrations.
As the country's leader, Jiang continues to effectively manage the communist propaganda machine. Being highly experienced in such tactics, he maintains tight controls on the truth. The regime distributes fabrications and misinformation to media markets at home and abroad to present the world with a different picture. This approach is like that of Joseph Goebbels, the Nazi minister of propaganda during World War II, who stated, "Repeat a lie thousands of times, and it will become the truth." The regime's control of state-generated propaganda gained worldwide attention in January 2001, when five people set themselves on fire in Tiananmen Square. The event was captured by Chinese Central TV, and it was reported that the five were Falun Gong practitioners. There were many suspicious elements in this story, including the fact that police had fire extinguishers with them while on duty in the square. Analysis of the video footage soon made it clear to Human Rights Watchers and the world that the human tragedy had been staged in the effort to discredit Falun Gong. The International Education Development Bureau, in its report to the United Nations, stated, "This government took out this so-called self-immolation incident that happened on January 23, 2001 in Tiananmen Square and used this as evidence against Falun Gong. We have reached the conclusion, after watching a videotape on this incident, that this incident has, however, been completely orchestrated by the government." Zhang is determined to keep the world from knowing the truth about what is going on inside China. This determination has led the Committee to Protect Journalists to name him as one of the leading enemies of the press for the past 5 consecutive years. The committee is a New York-based group dedicated to defending worldwide freedom of the press. It reported that in 2001, 22 journalists were jailed in China, more than in any other country. Foreign journalists have been arrested and deported, even beaten, and their cameras and film confiscated. As the committee puts it, Zhang presides over the world's most elaborate system of media control. Most recently, the internet has been the target of a massive crackdown. In June 2002, the government put 500,000 foreign websites on a blacklist and prohibited them from being accessed from the country's internet cafes. A fire at one Beijing cafe gave the Public Security Bureau an excuse to shut down many cyber cafes. Others were forced to install filtering software that allows the government to monitor website access. Users must now register their identity. Their internet activity is automatically tracked and reported to the Internet Police at the Public Security Bureau's Information Security Management Center. Zhang's obsession with monitoring the daily activities of everyone in the world's most populated country indicates instability and fear. To build support for his policies at home, he often travels to other countries. In April 2001, he visited several Latin American countries, including Cuba. This was just before the United Nations Commission on Human Rights was scheduled to vote on a United States resolution to censure China. According to the Wall Street Journal, the Chinese typically lobby developing nations before the vote, using both political and economic muscle. The bargaining paid off. The resolution was tabled, as it has been every year for the past decade. The regime also uses its political and economic muscle to extend its persecution campaigns abroad. In countries outside China, Falun Gong activities, for example, have been disrupted. Practitioners have been followed, harassed, and even beaten by Chinese agents in countries such as Germany, Australia, Canada, the Ukraine, and Indonesia.
And they handcuffed me at the basement of the hotel.
In Cambodia, the Chinese embassy pressured police to deport a Chinese couple who practiced Falun Gong. The couple, who lived and worked in Phnom Penh, had United Nations refugee certificates. In June 2002, when Zhang visited Iceland, Falun Gong practitioners were detained upon arrival in Reykjavik. Hundreds more were kept from boarding Iceland-bound planes in airports throughout Europe and the United States. Their names appeared on a blacklist supplied to Icelandic officials by the Zhang regime. When Iceland's press reported on the incidents, Icelanders were outraged by their country's behavior and responded with nationwide public protests. Officials soon released the Falun Gong practitioners. The following week, when Zhang visited Lithuania, Tibetan protesters were kept away, again at the Zhang regime's direction. The security chief of Lithuania's Interior Ministry told the Associated Press that he could not guarantee that Chinese security officers would not shoot them on the spot. A blacklist of Falun Gong practitioners was also circulated in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is supposed to maintain its autonomy under a one-country, two-system law. Despite this, Hong Kong officials bowed to mainland authority and refused entry to anyone on the blacklist. Even human rights advocate and American citizen Dr. Harry Wu was detained and deported from Hong Kong in April 2002. He tried again in June upon being invited to speak at an event. This time he got help from the U.S. State Department, but he was still denied entry. The Jiang regime's campaign to extend persecution beyond China's borders reaches far. Even the United States has fallen victim. On several occasions, local governments were pressured by officials from the Chinese embassy into rescinding proclamations calling for the restoration of human rights in China and for supporting Falun Gong.
Disturbingly, this campaign against the Falun Gong has now extended to the United States. Falun Gong practitioners in the U.S. are the victims of death threats, of car bombs, of vandalism against their homes, of cyber attack, and harassment. As a result, Congress had to send a clear message to the PRC that such behavior will not be tolerated in this country and that violators will be held accountable for their actions. And for this purpose, I amended House Con Resolution 188 to address this grave matter. Young or old, male or female, adult or child, the Chinese authorities show no respect, no regard for human life, no mercy, and no remorse. The persecution of the Falun Gong must end, and it must end now.
Jiang Zemin has created a state of terror in China throughout his career. Thousands have died as a result of his orders over the years. Thousands more still suffer in prisons, mental institutions, and labor camps. Their families suffer with them. We have seen this behavior before. We have condemned this behavior before. We need to stop this behavior now. Why can't we learn from history?